Welcome back to the Noise Pop Podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Spinelli, coming to you from San Francisco, California. It's late April, and just about every summer festival lineup has already been announced, and suffice it to say, we've been paying attention. In fact, 2 years ago, we had an episode titled, Where Are the Female Festival Headliners?, where Alyssa Pereira, who's a good friend and a pop culture reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle and SF Gate, joined us, and we looked at some of the mechanisms that were keeping female fronted acts off the top of festival bills and sometimes completely off the bill altogether. And now 2 years later, we've got Alyssa back on the show today to talk about what has and hasn't happened to festival bookings over the past 2 years. We'll also hear in a little bit from University of Chicago's Rob Mitchum, who, along with his colleague Diego Garcia Olano, have gathered a ton of festival lineup data and created some incredible visualizations that get published in Pitchfork yearly, including the latest one. And we'll hear from Rob shortly, but first, I wanted to welcome Alyssa Pereira back to the show. Alyssa, hello.
Hello.
Nice to have you back.
Nice to be back.
Welcome back. And I will say that we talk about this all the time. We never really stop thinking about gender parity or lack thereof and festival lineups, especially when these lineups started to come out at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. One of the first things I do when I see a new lineup out is scroll from the beginning to see where's the first female on here. Same thing with this year with all these lineups coming out.
Yeah, I do the same because, you know, I always say you're going to have a good time no matter what the lineup is at the festival. And I think that these people have a responsibility to kind of reflect the way the world looks in the way that they book their festivals. Let's start locally and kind of address the question of what has changed and what hasn't changed. And the big one is that our local backyard festival, Outside Lands, finally has a female fronted act as the headliner, and not two of them. And I'm pleased. How do you feel?
I'm super happy. Seeing Janet Jackson on there and the when they teased it on Twitter was just so exciting. Somebody out of left field for me, but was really great to see that name come up.
And I should say that there's also other festivals whose lineups have come out that haven't necessarily been as great on the female fronted acts in general. And there's two of them. And the first one is Firefly in Delaware. And that's just, what's going on in Firefly?
I don't know. This is a really bad lineup. I mean, cool to see Kendrick as a headliner, but of the first 23 billed acts, there's like one female on there. That is straight up bad. Like, there's no excuse for that.
The first act is SZA, I think, is like the ninth one down. And then the 23rd is Lizzo. Mm-hmm. And those are two out of 23 of the first 23 names on the bill, which is just kind of ignores the direction that a lot of people have been pushing for the festival industry to go in. Mm-hmm. And the other one that I think is even worse is Lollapalooza. And the first female fronted act on there is like 16 names down. Is that right? Is it Churches, the 16th name?
Yeah, Churches on the fourth line down. And what bothers me about this lineup is that why is St. Vincent on the fourth line behind some of these other acts? Like, I mean, I don't want to like knock anybody here on that's billed ahead of her, but I mean, she's a fucking star. Like, why is she so far down in this lineup?
It just seems like these festival, the way they're laying out these lineups, these festivals are, it's almost like an industry shill type of thing. I mean, like, Khalid is a good artist, but get the hell out of here, man. St. Vincent has been playing festivals for many, many years and doing it memorably. I want to go back in a second here and talk about the nuts and bolts of some of these festival lineups, who's on them, who's not, who could be on them, which ones are great, which ones suck. But first, I wanted to bring in Rob Mitchum from the University of Chicago. And I talked to Rob a week or so ago, and we're going to hear a portion of that conversation. And Rob and his colleague, Diego Garcia Olano, they've created a series of these data visualizations that appear in Pitchfork for the past couple years, and these graphics are amazing. You can toggle different options to look at just the female fronted acts on a festival bill, just the mixed ones, which is acts that have both males and females in the group, and also all male acts. And it's really an eye-opening way to see what's really happening between the lines of the gender gap at these festivals, if you will. And their latest study is up now at Pitchfork, and Here's Rob now. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about yourself. I looked at your GitHub page, and you know it says I'm a science and music writer from Oak Park.
I'm basically a science writer for the University of Chicago. So I cover science. I talk to scientists about their research and write about it. And as part of doing that, I kind of got interested in what's been going on with data science and sort of various software tools you can use to grab and analyze data. So the connection to this type of work is that I didn't really see anybody doing music analytics. I first started doing it for album of the year lists and then moved into this festival question a couple years ago. And the idea is really just people, when these lineups come out, when the posters come out, everybody has opinions obviously about them and their quality and issues like gender and whether they're all very similar now and things like that. But people are kind of doing it just eyeballing the lineups and making those types of judgments.
So you have this article that's coming out, you're revamping an analysis that you've done before for Pitchfork that kind of plots a lot of data and you look at 20 festivals and 1,000 artists. Tell us a little bit about what you're looking for here as you're plotting the data and how you chose those 20 festivals.
I take every festival's lineup and typically they put them in order of biggest artists to small artists. People joke about the font sizes, but there's a whole hierarchy. I start with the band in the upper left and I give them number one, and then I just go down one by one all the way to the bottom, whatever that could be, whether it's 100 or 150 bands, and put them in a spreadsheet. And once I have all 20 festivals, then I can sort of label each artist for gender, whether they're male, female, or mixed, which just means usually a band with both male and female members, though increasingly, I'm seeing solo artists that don't identify as gender binary, so I've been putting them under mixed because I don't really know what else to do with that. And then I can also label for genre. This takes a long time. It's a lot of just sort of busy work. But once I have it all in there, then I hand it over to my friend, Diego Garcia Olano, who is much better at programming and working with data. And he sort of slices it up to ask different questions of the data, such as, what is the gender representation at each festival? Or what is the mix of genres at each festival? Which festivals are most unique? Which artists are most ubiquitous for a given summer? Which artists seem to have demanded the most clout? They're only playing a couple festivals and they're very highly ranked at the festivals that they're playing at. You can get at a lot of different questions about this whole sort of festival industry that's, blown up over the past decade. And also kind of, make some inferences about music industry as a whole, because festivals have become such a big part of our modern music world.
What were some of the most surprising findings for you in this newest analysis that you did, or even newest findings, if you will?
Yeah. So last year when I did this, my main sort of A storyline was, are festivals becoming more and more similar? And it's kind of hard to quantify that. And I found some interesting stuff, but what ended up being sort of the most interesting finding last year and what really jumped out and got a lot of play on social media was this sort of gender representations at each festival. Particularly one just pie chart, very basic data visualization of, if you look across all the festivals, all 20 festivals we looked at, how many male artists are there, how many female artists, how many mixed artists are there? I would have guessed that there are more men than women on festival lineups in general, but just the actual numbers of that were pretty striking. Last year, it was only 11% female and 12% mixed. So you're talking, three out of every four artists on summer festivals were either male solo artists or bands of all males. So that, I think, caught people's eye, caught my eye, just to show the scale of this problem, that the gap really is, substantial here. It's not just, the sort of takeaway you get when you look at a bunch of posters. So this year we kind of flipped it and looked, sort of tried to dig into this, gender question a lot more. You're hearing it in the air a lot, not just about festivals, but also around the Grammys and just in general about, female representation in music. And it seems like it has sort of filtered into the festival industry, because when we looked at this year's data, there was good news, which is that the percentage of female artists jumped from 14% last year to 19% this year, which, you know, it's still only 19%, but a 5% jump is pretty big for just 1 year, I think.
Yeah.
And then if you look across festivals or at each individual festival, 18 of the 20 festivals we looked at have more female artists this year than they did last year. And the two that didn't are basically the same. The mix percentage stayed roughly the same from last year to this year. So you have basically right now this summer in U.S. festivals, you have 70% entirely male artists or male bands, and then 30% either women artists or bands that include at least one woman. So there's a long way to go, but it is getting better.
I'm curious if you think that now that festivals are kind of starting to go away from rock, you know, we're really hip hop sells and they're going towards that, that do you think that this problem is going to like slowly start to correct itself? Like Coachella just happened the first weekend, last weekend. And one of the underlying stories was how a lot of the rock and roll sets were kind of underattended.
All the things we looked at from last year to this year seems to indicate that, you know, the trends are going the right way for fixing this. It's just sort of a matter of whether you think they're going fast enough and whether the right festivals are doing enough to fix the problem. You know, what we found was that festivals that have more electronic hip hop and indie artists tended to be more gender equal, and rock had the opposite relationship. If you had more rock, you had more dudes, which I think is sort of confirming everybody's hunch. And, if you look at which festivals perform well and which perform more poorly on gender balance, that scans, right? Bunbury is a very rock-heavy lineup this year and typically is very rock-heavy. FYF and Pitchfork are a little bit more diverse as far as genre, not just gender. So yeah, I think it is a case where as you get more diverse in terms of the types of music you select, you're just naturally going to become more diverse in terms of gender and likely in terms of race as well, which is something we don't look at and would be really tough to look at. But yeah, I think if you could, it would probably track the same. I was surprised that Electronic actually predicted more female participation just because you see sort of this, I guess, cliche of the like male DJ producer in electronica. But it turns out that it actually, you know, that there is a lot more female artists in that world than there are in, say, the rock band world. So, I think, you know, like I was saying, it's sort of an optimistic forecast given this data. I think it's more interesting to look at particular festivals and sort of, you know, push hard on the ones that have the leeway to do better than they're doing. This isn't just a festival problem. It has to do with, you know, what music is put out there by record labels and maybe listening habits to some extent. Like some of the onus is on music fans to listen to more female artists than they do. It all circled in the Grammy debate was all, you know, it was very poorly put by, I forget who it was, the recording industry.
Yeah, Neil Portnow, is that his name?
Yeah, and he was, his message was sort of like, women need to step it up or something like that, which is totally the wrong way to frame this.
What the fuck, man? Yeah.
And I do not endorse it at all, but I think, it's all getting at the same problem, which is that there is a persistent gender gap in music as a whole, and you see it popping up in all these different facets of the music industry.
Okay, Rob, real pleasure. Thank you so much again.
Yep, thank you very much for having me.
Something in the sun or the air.
That was Rob Mitchum, and definitely check out his work at Pitchfork. It's up now. Couple big takeaways from that. The first one was the main stat that female representation at the 20 festivals that they surveyed has gone up from 14% to 19% overall. And that's something. Yeah.
It's something. It's something. I wouldn't call it a win. Yeah. I have no patience for it anymore. Just like do better, book better.
What's interesting there is, you know, one of the things that he mentioned is that three of the festivals that did achieve a 50% gender balance breakdown are Panorama in New York, Pitchfork in Chicago, and FYF in LA, which was just announced that it was canceled. And obviously my conversation with Rob was recorded before that happened. So there really wasn't any context for that. And a bit of a bummer, as FYF has been one of the festivals that's kind of trailblazed and and being a very diverse festival. I mean, last year had Bjork and Missy Elliott and Solange and Erykah Badu, you know, at or near the top. What does this mean for diversity moving forward in festivals? Like, this kind of changes things a little bit, doesn't it?
No, I don't want to say that it changes things. The situation sucks. I don't want to say that this is a setback, because I don't think it's that. I think that this was a case of this was a unique case of two festivals booking two similar headliners each.
Totally. I think that Outside Lands definitely cannibalized some of those ticket sales. And FYF has cited slow ticket sales as the sole reason as to why they canceled their lineup. And Outside Lands has, you know, two of the three headliners, Florence and the Machine and Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson makes sense. Florence, I think, makes sense in San Francisco. I'm just not sure for the FYF crowd if Florence makes sense.
I'm not really tuned in too much to the alternative radio stations, but I'm still not sure why Florence has been the go-to for this. I think that it would maybe have been more beneficial to book a rapper in that time slot for FYF.
Another thing that Rob mentions is how large festivals set the tone. And FYF was kind of bucking that trend, and they were kind of riding this wave. Mm-hmm. And now, I guess it kind of came to a screeching halt. But does that mean that in the future, when they book, that they have to adhere to the way that large festivals are booking?
No, I mean, they shouldn't. Janet is a one-name act. She's a first-namer. You could say the same thing about Florence. I don't think FYF should ever look to who's on the top 40 charts to figure out who they want to head their festival.
And that's a festival that started with LA punk roots.
Right.
You know what I mean? So in a sense, they've always kind of been true to that.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer like the super buzzy acts, like you said, Childish Gambino being at the head of that thing. Like, those are the buzziest and also best acts of the year. The ones that can, who can uniquely headline a festival at this point in time.
I guess there was a lot of talk about how this was a big blow for diversity, which I kind of mentioned in the beginning, and I don't really think that it was. I think that, you know, change comes with continuous effort, and I think that people shouldn't be discouraged by the fact that FYF got canceled, despite the fact that it had a diverse lineup as far as gender breakdown. So I'm not really buying that argument per se. Yeah, but I don't know. Ticket sales were slow, and maybe it was a victim of a saturated market, of a festival market.
I think you could attribute low ticket sales to a lot of things, but I would mostly look at it in terms of like, well, Outside Lands booked the two headliners of FYF. And with Outside Lands, you get so many more other acts than you would get at FYF. So there's much more variety. FYF, a much more beautiful landscape for a festival.
Total. The FYF venue is the worst aspect of it. They make it work, but, and maybe the LA crowd has a bit of a Coachella hangover. And on that note,
hold up, they don't love you like I love you. Slow down.
We haven't really talked about Coachella much, which is really kind of the end-all be-all of festivals. And Beyonce played this year, and what a freaking production. I mean, and maybe this is why she doesn't want to be playing a bunch of festivals, because there was a lot that went into that. And I know that a lot goes into like a Solange set when Solange plays multiple festivals, but there was, I mean, she had the whole marching band, you know, set up there. And there must have been hundreds of people who worked on just creating those 2 hours of entertainment. And that's just not something you can pick up and take to another city in festival conditions too, which is, you're not really playing like a tailor-made arena for a show like that. You know, you're just playing this big ass stage, generally outdoors. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, costume changes, all that stuff.
Everything. That's, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that goes back to what we talked about a couple of years ago, for why possibly, like, are speculating, maybe that's why these major female pop stars prefer to do their own tours, because they can control every aspect of the showmanship.
The Taylor Swift example.
Right. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'd love to see somebody like Rihanna.
Work, 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 work.
But that's somebody who from what I've like speaking with other artists who have worked with her, she's just like Beyonce and just like Solange, to where she, you know, has a very methodical way of doing things, and it's not a small time production. It's a big fucking thing. So that's hard, but you know, money talks, I guess. I hope somebody gets Rihanna to headline a festival soon.
Yeah, my worry with that is like that the billing will get lopsided, whereas like a headliner will play like 2 or 3 hours. I guess it's already happening, but
2 hours. I mean, an hour and a half to 2 hours is a really incredible headlining set.
Yeah, I just don't want that to be to the detriment of some of the lower billed acts who will be forced to play like 20-minute sets.
Okay, let's talk about some other festivals now. Who you think did do a good job? What are some of the lineups that you're into?
The Essence Festival in New Orleans has a killer lineup. That's Janet Jackson, Mary J. Blige, Erykah Badu, and Jill Scott. Back in the day when things were cool. Yeah. With Snoop Dogg in a special curation by The Roots. They're in New Orleans.
What I like about that one is that they could have easily put Snoop Dogg ahead of like Jill Scott.
They could have. Erykah Badu,
and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good festival. The one that really stands out to me is at Panorama Festival in New York. Have you seen the Saturday lineup for Panorama Festival? The Saturday is like the girl power day. Janet Jackson, who seems to be popping up at a lot of these things. SZA, Cardi B, then they name Gucci Mane. And then St. Vincent. And there's acts like Japanese Breakfast, J-Som. It's a killer like day. It's probably the best like festival day I've seen in a while. Like that's amazing.
I like the Form lineup a lot. I just love Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
But Courtney Barnett.
Curated by 100 Waters, by the way. Yes. Just to give credit when it's due to the people who did put that festival.
But yeah, we got Beach House, Courtney Barnett, Charlie XCX, and there's 100 Waters, of course, on here, J-Som. It's a really eclectic lineup, which I really like.
And there's balance too. You know, it's not like we're talking like Lilith Fair here, you know, where it's like every act is like, it's like a, you know, a female focused fest. No, it's just balance. It's just, this is how it should be.
And honestly, the other thing about the way this lineup is laid out in this untraditional way, the way it's like staggered, you know, you get Chance's name in the biggest font size, but everything else is just sort of like randomly here and there. And like, it's hard to tell like who is actually the highest billed act. And I actually really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's cool. I also like Afropunk. And I just think the whole series that Afropunk is going totally global now. There's Afropunk Brooklyn and Paris and Atlanta. And they've got people like Janelle Monáe, who's putting out some really great music this year. One thing that we should mention here, just to kind of look at festivals from all angles, not just the artist and booking perspective, but producer Colin reminded us of this. And there was an article that came out in Teen Vogue after Coachella Weekend 1, and the reporter Vera Papasova spoke with 54 female festival goers, and all 54 of them said described some case of sexual harassment that had occurred to them that weekend at Coachella, which is incredible and mind-boggling to me. There's a line in the piece where she says that during the 10 hours she was reporting on the story, she was groped 22 times, which is insane.
It's insane, yeah. I mean, and to echo Colin again, like these festivals are, you know, on purpose or not, catering to the male gaze, and they're only reinforcing that in their billings. Like, what was it, like 51% of festival goers are women? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. And how can you feel safe when the people providing the entertainment around you are a bunch of men? And it trickles down into the way that people act at the festivals. And I'm amazed at hearing the stats in that story. It's like, that is seriously hurt. You know, we talk about that, or I always say that, I was hurt when I saw this festival lineup come up. This is hurt. You know what I mean? This is like, this really should affect everybody when you hear those figures. And we'll link that article on the blog for this episode's page at noisepop.com/podcast. Check that out. And Jesus, what can we do to change this culture? because music festivals are really a reflection of, this is where we go for entertainment. You know, it's a reflection of what's happening in the world around us. So what can we do?
Well, in a dream world, like this would be, I'm definitely going to get some hate for this. But if people who are booked high up at festivals adopted their own inclusion rider, for a certain number of women or non-gender conforming acts to be on these billings, that would be one way to do it. The festival booker is probably their worst nightmare ever. But
has somebody had an inclusion rider yet? I mean, I know it's like a big thing in Hollywood now.
Right,
like Michael
yeah,
B. Jordan, said that he had an inclusion rider. And Frances McDormand spoke about it at the Oscars. But has anybody gone on record at festivals and speaking about an inclusion rider?
No, I mean, I think the closest thing we've had to that is that is a thing they're doing over in the UK. Key Change.
Yeah, which is however many festivals it was, 40.
Like 40, yeah.
40-something have pledged to reach 50% or better.
By 2020.
And there's some smaller U.S. festivals that are adopting the same thing, correct?
Yeah, there's one. It's like one in New York. It's a jazz festival in New York. I think that's the only one in the U.S.
Gosh. I think the big thing that we can keep doing is talking about this. And, you know, I think that conversations like you and I had a couple years ago and other people in local media in San Francisco and national media throughout the country need to keep bringing this up because, you know, it's pretty clear to me that I feel like the bookers don't hear it enough in their ears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this year it's better. It is definitely better. Yeah. Like the statistics show it, but it's not good enough.
It's a step.
Yeah.
It's merely a step. And I think we need to keep having these conversations. Let's have a little bit of fun here to go out. And what is your female-fronted headliner bucket list? And you said Aretha last time, and I know you want to say Aretha again. Is there somebody else besides Aretha you want to see gracing the stage of your favorite festival?
I would love to see Lauryn Hill. Since you were looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamin? Yeah. You act like you're I'd love to see Beyonce, obviously.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see Stevie Nicks or some semblance of Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Those are probably mine, yeah.
Right on. Minus Lindsey Buckingham.
Minus Lindsey Buckingham.
Mine would be Madonna, and not just Madonna, not that the Coachella debacle stuff that she's done in the past, but it'd be Madonna playing like a classic Madonna album.
Madonna Through the Years.
Yeah. Just doing like a hits thing, not trying to, I mean, I know she's always changing with the times or whatever. It's just she wants to be genreless or whatever it is, but just playing the hits and just playing the old stuff, and everyone can rally around that. And I think that there's such a beautiful sense of femininity that emanates from that woman. And she was one of the first ones who really, I feel like, really allowed herself to be out there and like super empowered unapologetically since the 80s. And, you know, in the 80s when that happened. And she's just, to me, she's the end all be all. That version of Madonna.
Yeah, I mean, well, what I love about Madonna is that she just is constantly like cycling again and again, reinventing herself every time, which would make her a really awesome headliner performer in the same way that like all the costume changes and all the aesthetic changes on stage would be like logistically a nightmare to execute on a headlining stage, but it would be such an amazing show.
Bjork would beg to differ. One other thing I wanted to mention, I know we said we're going to go out, but something that Rob Mitchum said to me was that he looks at genre a lot, and he said that rock and pop genre bookings tend to skew towards male acts, whereas hip hop and electronic tends to go more female. And it was surprising to him in the data. And I think that when you look at that, these festivals are starting to book a lot more of these hip hop and electronic acts, and when indie as well was one that he mentioned in there, that's going to help more steps happening so that number keeps rising.
Yeah, I mean, and I think too, just as, you know, time goes on, as these young acts that are a lot of these younger acts that are female fronted, like they're going to become the heavyweights in the music industry.
Oh, yeah.
So they're just going to get built higher and higher as the years go on.
Show up early to all festivals and check it all out, because the future is in there. Alyssa, thank you so much for doing this again. And I hope that people keep listening to us and that these festival lineups keep getting better, not worse.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Right on. Also, many, many thanks to our guest, Rob Mitchum, and his colleague, Diego Garcia Olano. You can check out their most recent data visualizations as they pertain to festivals at Pitchfork and linked on this episode's blog page at noisepop.com/podcast. The Noise Pop Podcast is produced by myself and Colin Peden, and it's engineered by Colin. Our executive producer is Dawson Ludwig, and thanks to Nina Bahan for admin support. Until next month, I'm your host, Adrian Spinelli. Cheers.
Newborn child, holding myself close, pretending my arms are yours.